Friday show here on Twin Cities News Talk AM 1130, 103.5 FM. If you weren't listening last hour, you missed an appearance from Don in Burnsville.
That's the first time he's been on the show since I've been here, John.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. I was going to mention that to you off the air, but now I'll mention it on the air. I know we have, obviously, some longtime A1 listeners that listen every day, and I'm pretty sure he has not called in a very, very long time.
Yeah, it's okay.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, that's fine.
CPAC, huh?
I wish the call had been, for the first time calling in, I wish it had been better. I really wanted to get into like how this whole radio thing works, but I knew better because, you know, that's...
This isn't a restaurant where you come in and order something and the chef comes out and the waiter comes out with your
food.
Well,
and, you know, yes, you're right. And in representative, you know, Tom Emmer knows this. You don't, you can't predict what listeners want to talk about. You have to find the things that you want to talk about. So... Representative Tom Emmer, good morning, sir.
Good morning, John. Good to hear you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on the show once again. Got a lot to talk about. First off, let's start here. Too many tragedies these days, Tom Emmer. And I'm referring to the passing of U.S. Representative Jackie Walorski. Governor Walz did order flags at half staff for the Indiana representative. The congresswoman and her two staffers and another driver were killed in a car crash on August 3rd. I know that you've offered up condolences as well, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on the representative's passing.
There's not a lot to say, John. Your heart is, like, broken when you get the news.
Yeah.
Jackie Walorski was respected and loved by both sides of the aisle. She was a true conservative. She stuck to her guns. She was a Ways and Means member. She fought hard to get to Congress. She and her husband, Dean, had her elderly mother living with them. She just had a knee replaced and had been out for several weeks and was excited to get back. She was doing district visits with her comms director, communications director from Washington, and with her district director from Indiana. Two young people that, you know, they didn't deserve to lose their lives either. This is just, it's tragic,
yeah.
John. And we'll find out more as it goes on. But it also should remind each and every one of us that every day we have these really heated points of view that we want to debate, and we think this is the biggest thing that ever happened to us, and boy, this will be the end if we aren't successful. Well, you got to put it all in perspective.
Yeah.
You can be here today, you can be gone tomorrow, so make the best of it.
Totally agree, Representative Tom Emmer. And let's move on to some other issues. We were just talking with our guests in studio, Rebecca Brandon and Howard Root, and had joined me and been covering the wake of FarmFest. FarmFest served as its usual magnet Tuesday, according to the story I have here in front of me, for political candidates casting themselves as friends of agriculture and office seekers of both parties, saying they know what ails farmers and what it might take to fix it. I know that you were there as well, part of a series of panels. But give us your take on this year's FarmFest. A lot. I mean, there's been a lot coming out of this year's event, certainly with the debate between Walz and Jensen, but curious to get your experience and what you heard from the farmers there.
Wow, it's a great event, and anybody who hasn't been to FarmFest should actually put it on their bucket list and go check it out. I talk about it all the time that when I was a kid going to the state fair, you'd go to Machinery Hill, right, and that's where you'd see all the new innovations in ag, you know, the new combines, the new tractors, all the equipment. Well, now you go to Machinery Hill and you see a riding lawnmower. You know, you see a couple of pickup trucks. And not to be offensive to the people that make Machinery Hill what it is today, but it's not what it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. You want to see everything in ag, you go to FarmFest. And it's the best. But the political mosh pit that they create by putting 11 candidates for Congress on a stage, and I mean, it's just, I think they probably have to revisit how they're doing the forum. And, you know, for me, it was a good experience. I do it every opportunity that I get. But I will tell you, nobody wanted to ask the questions. You had to bring it up yourself. It's this double-digit inflation that the Biden administration owns.
Yeah.
I mean, Angie Craig's sitting down there trying to talk about how she's bipartisan. She works with everybody across the aisle. you know what? You can talk all you want, but it's got to be the walk. It can't be the talk. These guys are destroying farm families and other families all across the country with their failed policies, and they own them. It's funny because I brought that up at the end. I was concerned a little bit that it was a little too aggressive, but was told afterwards I was thanked by several people because nobody was talking about it and, inflation and crime and the border. And it was amazing. You'd think that it never happened if you look at the fish wrap from Minneapolis,
right,
or, some of the other reporters that were down there.
Well, and this speaks to, again, the common theme. We were talking about it last hour, of just the way that the media covers these events and the shielding that it gives to here in the state to DFLers. We played several clips between Walz and Jensen yesterday, and including some clips of Governor Tim Walz being asked to questions from farmers, dodging one question about crime in Minneapolis, and then finding an opportunity to pitch off of a conversation with a farmer who's lost his farm after 30 years. Tom, you made a comment a moment ago about the border, and hearing from many farmers yesterday in the wake of the clips that we played who called into the show or left talkbacks, it reminded me very much of what I'd heard in my time in the Southwest near the border, of those ranchers who've had, property on the border for generations and have felt like the government has left them behind and doesn't have their back as their properties have been, in their case, been trampled on by those coming into the country illegally. I was getting the same sort of sentiment from a lot of the people calling in, that they feel like, that here in Minnesota, their voices are not being heard, and they've been hurt by this administration and are feeling left behind.
John, they're not just not being heard. This administration has abandoned the southern border, is a great example. Chris Wray, the head of the FBI, recently testified before, I think it was a Senate committee, that this is not only a crisis, but terrorists. He's concerned about terrorists coming across the southern border. But here's the bigger problem. You do not have an honest media in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
You do not. I mean, today there's an editorial, and I won't give them the benefit of a click, but there's an editorial that the misnamed, the faux Inflation Reduction Act, which is a bunch of garbage. I mean, their idea of getting out of this inflation and all the things that ail America are spending even more money, another $750 billion. It's only going to exacerbate the problems. You're finding out that Americans are suffering from food shortages, which are caused by what, ladies and gentlemen? They're caused by double-digit inflation. People can't afford the groceries that they're going to buy. And these guys want to spend more money. And what does our local news do? Well, they don't hold anybody accountable. They write an editorial that this is the answer. And it's the same bull that we've been getting for years, that if government spends money, that will save us all money. That's garbage. That's garbage. It's defying the laws of gravity. And you know what? I think Americans, I think Minnesotans are just smart. I think they're a lot smarter than they're given credit to by these intellectual political elites. And I think they're going to show up in November and stick it right up their nostrils.
We have I want to talk a little bit more about the Inflation Reduction Act and the time that we have with you, your thoughts on Tuesday's primaries. Before we do that, though, we do have a talkback via the iHeartRadio app that's addressing this very issue.
Good morning, guys. Great show. Dale in Princeton, Minnesota version. I remember hearing a news report, I can't remember where, but this Inflation Reduction Act is going to increase taxes on anybody making over $30,000 a year. Can you guys clarify that a little bit? Clear me up on it.
Yeah.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Representative Tom Emmer, we've seen several different studies come out. As a CBO, actually, what I saw this morning came out and said that it was going to raise inflation rates. But there's been several reports talking about how this Inflation Reduction Act, which I agree with you, it's a lie. That name is ridiculous. But it is going to end up raising taxes on everybody. Can you comment a bit on that?
Let's stop calling it the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah, what do you want to call it, Tom? What do you want me to call it instead?
It's called Build Back Broke, the sequel.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is exactly what this is. Is it just a pared back version of what they were trying to do before? It's got the same garbage in it, just not as much. And it's $750 billion instead of the $2 to $3 trillion or even $4 that some of these so-called progressive socialists wanted to spend. Look, John, every time it's reported that this is a, we can talk about specific tax increases, but to the caller, it doesn't matter if they talk about corporate America, which is very popular, right? It's okay. People like it when you talk about taxing the big corporations.
Yep.
That sounds good, right? But nobody sits down and writes a critical piece where they say, do you understand that business just plays by whatever rules the elected officials and government put out? So if they raise taxes by 30%, guess what? Whatever service, whatever product that company is providing is going to go up by 30% because you and I will end up paying for that tax increase, not the corporation ultimately. So these guys, it's all a shell game for them. And it's the idea that government can't be resized. It's like our major universities in the state. You think any one of them is looking at their bloated budgets and the garbage that they're teaching these kids? No. What they're doing is saying, we're going to increase the student tuition by 4 and 5% in the next year. My goodness, if you're a parent sending your kid to the University of Minnesota and they're telling you you got to pay more for that type of an education with the crime that's going on down there, you better think twice. These policies, Democrats own them. They broke it. Republicans are here. We have to not only get elected, but then we got to walk the walk and fix it.
Let's talk a little bit about Tuesday's primaries in five states. Anything, any larger narrative that you can take away from the outcomes on Tuesday? And I'll give you sort of like my perspective on it. And it typically is when you look at these primaries, it's really tough to, at least in my view, it's tough to get an overall feel or take away any sort of larger talking point when you're looking at individual states and the dynamics in those individual states. That being said, is there anything that you saw out of Tuesday's primaries, good or bad?
Well, a couple of things. One, on a campaign side, and I know we were talking mostly official, but just as a passing observation, as you know, I run the committee for the House Republicans.
Right.
We don't get involved in primaries because I believe from day one that it's the people on the street, the people from the communities that you're seeking to represent, that should be the ones who decide who the representative is. Not only do you get better voices, but you get people who are going to be more effective as opposed to people that are tapped by some consultant, some high-paid consultant on the East Coast that says, oh, I think he or she would be the best representative in this district. We stopped that 3-4 years ago, and it's had great impact. So you see in Michigan, we had an incumbent, Peter Meyer, was beat by John Gibbs. I think the Democrats are going to regret. That's the one where they put almost $500,000 into John Gibbs because they want him to be the candidate.
Right.
I think they're going to regret that, and we're going to make sure they regret that. Look, the people speak in these races. We take the people they send us. The one that I'm watching or that I watched, everybody wants to talk about Kansas. This is like the new, fire alarm for the Democrats. Oh, look, the backlash over Dobbs. No, I don't think so. I think the vote that happened in Kansas the other night is entirely consistent with Dobbs, and it shows everyone that what Justice Alito did with his opinion was absolutely appropriate and accurate from a legal standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
He literally honored the ideal of federalism. These decisions should be made by the states. And I think a lot of people think that's a bellwether for Republicans got to worry about Democrats. I think it's just the opposite. I think people who thought this was an issue now realize that, no, it is where it should be, and that's with the states. I think ultimately, John, as we push towards November 8th, it's going to become less and less of a factor.
Representative Tom Emmer, thank you so much for the time this morning. Any big plans for the weekend?
Hey, I'm going to be around the district. I can't wait. It's going to be beautiful, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be hopefully in the 80s as opposed to 100 or whatever it was down at Farm Fest.
It's so nice. It's so nice, Tom. I may actually go outside. I might actually do that.
Oh, come on. That blood is thickened up.
Yeah, no. I need to get out and get some exercise. Hey, it was great talking with you. Thank you so much for the extended time this morning. I really do appreciate it.
Have a great Friday, John.
You too. Coming up. Minnesota Attorney General candidates outlined different approaches to dealing with violent crime. We had on one Attorney General candidate yesterday. Today, we'll be talking with the GOP-endorsed candidate for Attorney General here in Minnesota. That would be Jim Schultz. Ahead of our conversation with Fox News' Laura Ingraham, who spent her week here in Minneapolis, coming up at 8:35 this morning.
Right at 8, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
A lot of talk about the crime that we're unfortunately dealing with here in the Twin Cities, surrounding areas. A couple of perspectives we have coming up. People that want to fix it. Some people that are coming in from the outside and experiencing it. That being Laura Ingraham, who's been in town all week. She'll be joining us at 8:35. Before we talk with our next guest, let's hear from you using the iHeartRadio app and the TalkBack feature.
Hi, this is Daniel in Bloomington. So, this whole thing in Minneapolis, I've changed things. I moved my dental relationship from Minneapolis to Bloomington. I no longer go to my two favorite restaurants in downtown. I will not go to a Twins game anymore. It's just crazy. I know my daughter and her mother think I'm nuts. I think I'm smart.
You guys are talking about the downtown area and people not willing to go there. The first thing that needs to happen is businesses and organizations like the Twins need to stop putting up signs in the outfield, end racism and George Floyd and all that. All they're doing is encouraging more hatred. And are they talking to their fan base, or who exactly are the racists? I guess I'd like to know that. Is that their fans or somebody?
Joining us now on the show is a man who has a plan to combat violent crime. He is the GOP-endorsed candidate for Attorney General here in Minnesota. It's Jim Schultz. Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. Hey, let's get right to it. Your plan to combat violent crime. You know, people want solutions. They want to know what can be done. What is your plan were you to be elected as Attorney General?
Well, fundamentally, it starts with it's great to be on your show, John. It starts with hiring dramatically more prosecutors. We've got to prosecute violent crime in our state. It's an absolute disgrace that we've embraced this revolving door where criminals commit serious crime and then are let out on low bail or no bail or aren't prosecuted adequately ultimately. That is an absolute outrage. And, you know, it starts in the Attorney General's office. Right now, we have an Attorney General in Keith Ellison who has embraced every far-left cause in that office, failed to prosecute violent crime, got behind the defund the police movement. Think about that. The chief law enforcement officer of our state has backed defunding the police. And so it starts with aggressively prosecuting violent crime. And so I have a plan to hire dramatically more criminal prosecutors in the office. There's only three criminal prosecutors in an office of about 150 attorneys right now. We've got to move on from some of the stuff in the office that's just this far-left activism and instead do the basics of the office of putting criminals in prison.
Keeping with you, got a couple of different issues I want to talk to you with you about this morning. Again, talking with Jim Schultz running for Attorney General. Let's keep with crime for a moment. And share with the audience, I know you have a personal, I know the issue is very personal for you. With regard to your family, talk a little bit about that aspect.
Yeah, it is personal for me. I have a sister who lives in North Minneapolis. She woke up one morning to gunfire on her front lawn. A man had careened his car into her yard. He had been on a chase with police. He was shooting out his back windows at law enforcement, and they were, of course, returning fire. The end result was multiple bullet holes in her home. I still remember her calling me crying that morning. And that's representative of what North Minneapolis has become. That's representative of what much of Minnesota and the metro have become. And it's an absolute disgrace. It is an absolute disgrace what Minneapolis, what St. Paul, and much of our state has become. Because it wasn't just inevitable. This is a man-made disaster caused by horrendous policies. And we've got to restore sanity to the Attorney General's office, to the governor's office, and otherwise. And it starts with ensuring that we beat Keith Ellison in 2022.
We covered on this show a few years back the importance that Democrats had put on putting their people in office in the position of attorney general. And that was certainly one of the big question marks as to why, you know, Keith Ellison ran for that seat in the first place, based off of what he had been doing in terms of politics. Talk a little bit about what you think, Keith Ellison has done to this position since the time he's been in office.
Well, fundamentally, it's become a completely politicized position, completely politicized, where he embraces every far left cause, like defunding the police. This is, you know, a man who has embraced defunding the police, a man who, you know, who in the midst of the largest increase in crime in decades, doesn't hire additional criminal prosecutors, undermines police in many different ways, you know, gets behind these, you know, in the case of, Kim Potter, upcharging her, for a serious mistake and ultimately, you know, pursuing that much more aggressively than the violent criminals that are taking the lives of Minnesota's sons and daughters. And so we have a fundamentally politicized office. And what we have to do is get the politics out of it. Instead, go get back to the basics, prosecute crime, hold wrongdoers accountable. It's very simple. And that's what we've got to do. And I got into this race because I think a lot of people sense it. You know, we're losing the Minnesota we have known and loved. We're losing the Minnesota we've known. And I grew up here. I'm a fifth generation Minnesotan. And in a lot of ways, this race didn't personally make a lot of sense for me. I've got three young kids. I was in a comfortable job professionally. But my wife and I prayed on it a lot, you know, thought about it a lot and felt called to step forward because we've got to turn it around. If we don't turn it around now, the state is going to be in a really, really dire straits for the long term.
Talking with the GOP endorsed candidate for Attorney General Jim Schultz, your primary challenger in this race has been very vocal over his views and his opinion on the issue of, you know, Roe versus Wade and abortion. We also know that Keith Ellison decided not to appeal the court ruling of the lifting of the abortion restrictions here in the state. Kind of a two-pronged question here. One, your thoughts on Ellison staying out of that ruling, and then two, sort of the differentiate yourself between your primary opponent and the race that you're running.
Yeah, for sure. So, number one, I mean, it's an absolute outrage that Keith Ellison has completely, you know, engaged in complete dereliction of duty here, failing to appeal this ruling. I mean, this is judicial activism at its finest. I mean, these are common sense bipartisan laws like parental notification that they were struck down by this activist judge. Keith Ellison has a duty as the attorney general to appeal them. He is completely failing in that duty by failing to appeal them. And I'm heartened that it appears that a county prosecutor is seeking to intervene in the case and appeal them. And then when I'm the attorney general, we can bring the case forward simply to do the job of the attorney general. That is to defend Minnesota statutes. And that's what I'll do. Now my primary opponent, you know, I get used to, as somebody, a political outsider, a bit in the private sector, just getting used to the ways in which politicians lie. And unfortunately, that's what my primary opponent has been doing here lately. You know, he's saying lots of false things about me. I've actually been involved in pro-life matters. I helped set up a crisis pregnancy center down in Mankato. So I don't think there's anybody who better exemplifies, you know, the pro-life perspective than I do. But there's a reason I won the Republican endorsement. There's a reason why I've been endorsed by the Minnesota Gun Caucus, why I've been endorsed by law enforcement. It's because I'm a conservative fighter who's going to win in November. I'm a conservative fighter. We're going to get it done. I tell my team, you know, failure is not an option. Failure is not an option. You know, my primary opponent has frankly made a habit of failure throughout his career. He's lost three straight races, and he's telling us that he's the one who can beat Keith Ellison. He's not going to beat Keith Ellison. I am, and that's what conservatives recognize, and that's what's going to come down to on Tuesday. People should come out and vote in that. We're on track, and we're very confident that that things will ultimately turn out the right way there. But you know, there's a reason I'm the Republican endorsed candidate because I'm the candidate who can win, and I've demonstrated my conservatism throughout my life.
Talking with Jim Schultz, is running for attorney general here in Minnesota. Are you sensing, talking with the public, that there is an increased interest in this race? It feels like in the past, you know, I think, not that it's flown under the radar, obviously, it's an important position, but certainly in the course of the past, you know, year, with the rise in crime and the where you can find it, the talk of the revolving door of criminality taking place and the role that the Attorney General's office plays in that. Are you seeing that translating to an increase in interest in this particular race?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing the amount of energy that's behind ensuring that we beat Keith Ellison. You know, people recognize that in Keith Ellison, we have a complete far-left political activist in the Attorney General's office, and we're seeing the consequences of that. We're seeing 100 murders in Minneapolis and 650 carjackings, you know, crime and violence bleeding out to the rest of the state, and people want and demand change. And so there's incredible energy behind this, and people recognize that we have got an incredible opportunity in 2022 to win this race for the first time in over 50 years. And we're going to do it. You know, we have to do it for the future of our state. You know, as I said before, failure is not an option. We're going to win. We have to win for the future of our state because our kids depend on it. The future of the state depends on it. And nobody's going to work harder than my team. Nobody's going to work harder than myself to ensure that we get it done.
What was the final, and just one more thing before I let you go. You mentioned it earlier in terms of being a relative newcomer and getting into the race. What was the main catalyst? Was there one thing that finally sort of pushed you to decide to run? Was it a number of things? I'm just kind of curious again, and it's always fascinating to me when somebody decides who hasn't, you know, sort of been involved in politics before decides to run. I'm just curious what the catalyst was.
Well, you know, I didn't decide to get into the race until late 2021, but I'll tell you a turning point in my thinking in terms of what I needed to do going forward in terms of getting involved more and otherwise was 2020 and seeing Minneapolis burn and seeing the violence and chaos on our streets. I mean, I love this state. You know, my great-great-grandfather came here in 1875 as a Civil War veteran fighting for the North and came here. I love this state deeply and we're losing it. And I just couldn't watch this city burn, Minneapolis burn, couldn't watch our state consumed by violence, couldn't watch these kids getting shot on the street every other day and not step forward. So that was really the turning point for me.
Where can people find out more about Jim Schultz?
So my website is jim4mnag, jim4mnag.com. And they can find me on Facebook and Twitter, Jim Schultz. We're going to get it done. Please join with us. You can volunteer, you can donate. We're going to win. Come out and vote here over the next week. Voting has already started. And really appreciate the time with you here, John, this morning.
Thank you so much, Jim. It was great talking with you as well. And I'll probably be talking with you and the other candidates again next week. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
Coming up from Fox News, very pleased to welcome to the show. And it's been far too long since I have had the opportunity to speak with her, Laura Ingraham. We'll talk about her time here touring Minneapolis. Segment for a Friday here on Twin Cities News Talk AM 1130 103.5 FM. My name is John Justice. That man in there is producer Robbie, and I am very, very pleased to welcome to the show from Fox News one Laura Ingraham. Good morning, Laura. It's been far too long since I've talked with you.
Hey, it has been. It's like just a few years or so. How are you?
Something like that. I'm doing okay. How have you enjoyed your time in Gotham? You're a brave woman.
Yeah. I was in Minneapolis and Twin Cities all sort of all over for about, I don't know, 8 days or so. And, you know, people who have been listening or watching me for years know that I don't know, Minneapolis is my home away from home, and Minnesota, you know, I spend every single summer quite a bit of time in Minnesota, and I love it. So for me to see what's happened over the last 2 years especially, it's just a heartbreak. I mean, from the 2 weeks or so after Floyd and the riots when I was there to today, so little has been done, and the situation, as you know, has deteriorated for law enforcement, for safety, for the kids at University of Minnesota. I mean, new immigrants, longtime residents, everyone I talk to, there's a sense of despair, anger, frustration, and desperate need for change.
You know, I've been here 6 years now as of this month, and have just watched it, and like you said, slowly deteriorate, you know, but right before my very eyes, and you know, all under DFL liberal policies, and it's almost become a sad running commentary of looking up at the news and seeing that Minneapolis is back, you know, up on Fox News for nothing positive. I was certainly glad to see you here and you touring and exposing the fact that we have not, you know, rebuilt so much of what burned those years ago. But yeah, it's been incredibly frustrating. And Laura, you know what it is, and I know you know this, it's because it doesn't have to be this way. But if for some reason, the same leadership keeps getting voted into positions of power that just perpetuate this ongoing problem and this revolving door of criminality that we're dealing with.
Now, and I think the thing that people should take hope in is the fact that not only does it have to be this way, but a change in leadership it can be just around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to make sure that after they watch, you know, some of my reporting from Minneapolis, that they don't become more hopeless. I spend the time doing what I do because we can't leave any city or state behind. We just can't do that. We can't just throw up our hands and say it's, you know, hell in a handbasket.
Right.
It's all over. No, it's not all over. I mean, we know what works. We know what law enforcement needs. We know people have to get back to work. I mean, this idea of sitting around and waiting for a government check, that those days have to be long since over. And that's the kind of reform that we need. But if an area is not safe, businesses aren't going to return, people aren't going to return, and suddenly people are going to stop going to things like the Twins games if they're going to be shootings outside the stadium. So all of that can change, but the people of Minneapolis have got to dump out of Ilhan Omar. You got to get rid of these city council members who are just the absolute most radical, rabid leftists,
mm-hmm.
who are really the ones responsible for this, much more so than Jacob Frey, who I think is more reasonable than a lot of people on the outside think he is. But he's really hamstrung by the city council. They're horrific.
Talking with Laura Ingraham from Fox News. Is there any comparison to the time you spent in other, you know, metropolitan areas that are dealing with crime as well? I'm just curious,
yes.
if you can make a comparison.
Yeah, well, I'm from Glastonbury, Connecticut, which is a suburb of Hartford. And I think that Hartford really is such so small compared to Minneapolis. It's a really, geographically, it's much smaller. But I really want to make sure, to the extent that I can help, to make sure that it doesn't become Hartford. Hartford had gone through decades of decay and decades of business losses. And and again, crime, drugs, failing schools, the same liberal policies that don't work all over the world were, you know, imparted on the people of Hartford, which used to be a beautiful, vibrant city. And but the decline of Hartford, Connecticut is like a 70-year decline.
Mm.
So that cannot, and I don't believe it will happen to Minneapolis. I do think people are waking up, and I think it takes some time and the presidential, you know, stuff with Trump. I think that now that made things a lot more complex for the people of Minnesota. But I think now, from what I could gather, people are ready. I think Waltz is in trouble. I think Scott Jensen. You're going to see him making this gubernatorial race very interesting, and with a common sense approach, because this is not Republican or Democrat. That's not just a cliche to say that. This is just common sense, period. And there is no common sense or personal responsibility injected into the equation in Minneapolis right now. And that has to end. No one wants to live this way. No one I know.
Was there anything surprising, anything that stuck out in your time when you were in downtown Minneapolis? I know you had a chance to talk to law enforcement and speak to some of the people down there. I'm just curious if anything kind of surprised you of your interactions.
Yes, and that's an excellent question. I think that the level of hope is surprising. And the law enforcement, I was able to spend time with a lot of different folks from the law enforcement, different backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, racial backgrounds, levels of experience. But gosh, these men and women who do this very, very difficult and dangerous job, they love their work. I mean, it's really quite something. I don't know if I could do it. I really don't. Not with what they're facing out on the street. No respect. Split second decisions can destroy their lives, even if it's a good faith decision. Everything they do is recorded. Their cell phone recording them every minute of the day. Phones up to their face, like 5 inches away. The lawlessness. But gosh, I was really heartened by the fact that not only do they want to do their jobs, but they want to help this city. And thank God we have people like that. And a lot of these people are young people. So that to me was very surprising. But then again, knowing the people of Minnesota, it really shouldn't have surprised me, because it's such a wonderful state. It's such an incredible, just incredible, diverse and rich environment for manufacturing and healthcare and, you know, all the great businesses over the years that started in Minnesota. We just have to make sure people aren't going to leave Minnesota, which, as you know, John, is starting to happen.
Oh yeah.
So that has to end.
Well, with the law enforcement, you know, and their desire to do the job that they're doing, they'd have to, right? I mean, your heart would have to be in it to still be doing it based off of who your bosses are. I mean, you'd have to be dedicated. You know, it reminds me a little bit, you know, our history kind of goes all the way back to when I was first working with Drew in Tucson. You were on the radio station that we were doing. And I know that, you know, if I've had people throughout my radio career come up and like, how can you talk about this stuff every single day? You know, it's like, and I'm certainly equating what we do to law enforcement, for crying out loud. But, you know, we love what we do. I know that you love what you do. Talk a little bit before we let you go, you know, with Ingram Angle and, you know, the amount of success you've had with this show. I mean, you've had a long career, you know, in broadcasting, but I'm just curious to get your perspective of the show you're doing now and what you're getting out of it right now.
Thank you. Well, you know, I hosted a radio show nationally for about 17 years, which I loved. I mean, I love radio. I miss it. I miss doing it every day. I tried to do both for about a year and a half, and it almost killed me because it was literally working in the morning on radio. And
I can only imagine. I can only imagine.
Not good for my children or me. It was a bad decision, but that's how much I loved it. I didn't want to give it up. And so TV is different in good ways and you know, I don't say bad ways, but it's just different. Like, so, you know, my show's on at 10 o'clock Eastern, and I'm a morning person. So, and I'm still a morning person. So getting my schedule and less sleep and all that, that's kind of the challenge. The great thing is that I have a really fun team of people who work with me, and I think we really have made a difference, both on the discussion early on COVID and the lockdowns, which, as you know, I was vehemently against from March of 2020 on, to, you know, the medical tyranny that we're seeing unfolding across this country, where doctors are punished for actually being doctors and observing what they see with medicines and treatments. You know, it's really what happened in the, you know, the presidential race and exposing the media bias and Mueller. And so all my legal background, I think, has really helped me a lot. Everyone probably remembers I was a criminal defense lawyer and I clerked for Justice Thomas. So all that stuff really helped me a lot. But radio helped me an enormous amount. So we've had a lot of success. God, you know, thanking God for that, but a lot of success at 10 o'clock, and hope it continues through 2024. And mostly it's about helping the country at this point. I'm fine. The country needs help. So that's really my focus.
Yeah. And I just don't want the Republicans to blow it this year. We've got such an opportunity.
If anyone can blow it.
You know,
if anyone can blow it.
I know. Right.
Can, right.
Right.
John? But I'm so excited that you're having such a great career in Minnesota. It's being there for the last, you know, 8 days or so. I was sad to come back, and I miss my dogs, but I have such great friends. They're like my family up there. So I always feel at home. And just, I got up north to Grand Rapids, which is really fun. I caught about 5 northern. We fried them up, had a good fish fry.
Nice.
It was a good time. Yeah, good time.
Well, Laura, it's great talking with you again. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join the show. Anytime you want to do radio, you're welcome to come on here.
Let's do it again. Maybe I'll come in person next time I'm in the area.
I know. I was like, oh my gosh, she's in town. I need to go up and track her down.
We'll hang out for sure. And great to hear your voice.
Yeah, and you know what? And thank you so much for this morning, because it was positive in a way that I wasn't expecting, and I really do appreciate that perspective from you. Thank you so much.
All right. God bless. Talk to you guys soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye, Laura. 651-989-5855. That was surprising. And it was good. It was good to hear an outside perspective from somebody. I've got a tremendous amount of respect for Laura Ingram. And it's interesting. I should have mentioned it, or maybe I shouldn't have. But years ago, when I had first started working with Drew at the previous radio station, as Laura mentioned, she was doing her radio show and she was on at the time. And I'll never forget, and I've mentioned this several times on the show, but I'll never forget she, I don't remember what the context was of what Laura was talking about, but she made a comment of, you do the right thing and you win every time. And while that's not an absolute, I will never forget being in the studio, listening to the show, and hearing Laura make that comment, because it's just something that has stuck with me, not just in my radio career, but just in life in general, as well. And it was encouraging to hear her actually bring about some positivity. And she's right. You know, if we can get the change necessary in terms of leadership, and I'm not holding my breath of that happening inside of Minneapolis anytime soon, who knows? You know, while you're choosing between the lesser of two evils and Don Samuels and Representative Ilhan Omar, I do generally believe that Don Samuels would do a better job, even if he is on the left as opposed to Ilhan Omar. But Laura's right. If we can get change, we can bring about change rather quickly. And it doesn't have to be the way that it is right now. So that was really encouraging. All right, let's go and talk with Dan in Hopkins. Good morning, Dan. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk. What's on your mind?
Well, it'd be great if us callers could talk to your guests like Laura Ingraham and Jim Schultz. I know the segments are short, but if you could think about me having them on a little longer, we can ask tough questions. Like Laura calling the race for the Robeson over Kerry Lake in Arizona when Kerry Lake clearly won. It was really pissed a lot of us off. And yeah, I'm thinking Jim Schultz, he's never going to win if you don't fix the election fraud in the counties of Minnesota. You know the Democrats are going to steal it again, just like they're doing in Arizona against Kerry Lake with Katie Hobbs trying to steal, you know. It's the election fraud is the problem. And I don't mean to be harping on that all the time, but it's the truth. Jensen has no chance as long as there's the massive election fraud that we have in a few counties.
Listen, Dan, all that we can do is get out the vote at this point in time. All right. In terms of the dynamics of having guests on the show, there's a lot of different moving parts when it comes to that, especially when we're doing phone interviews, and phone interviews are typically difficult when it comes to patching in callers with that and depending on the time and who the guest is. So there's just variables involved in that. So we'll move beyond that at this point in time. That being said, as it relates to potential for voter fraud, as we've maintained on the show all along, all you can do moving forward right now is get out the vote. Encourage your friends and family to get out the vote. Support the candidates that you can support with your time and your money. And if you have the opportunity to help assist in keeping this election integrity intact by going to polling places and getting involved in that fashion, then you should do that. We need to elect people who are going to promote, right, election integrity. That are going to promote, you know, securing when we go to the ballot box, not making it as easy as it was in previous elections, you know, but we can talk about the fraud all you want. We haven't had the evidence to overturn any elections when it relates to that. We've had isolated incidents of this. We all know about the ballot harvesting taking place. We all know about the Zuckerbucks that gets pumped into and was pumped into various swing districts during the last election. But at the end of the day, all you can do is do what you are capable of doing in supporting those people. You know, otherwise, it's just going to be fraud. And I'm not saying that you're saying that, Dan, at all. You got to stay involved. Use that energy to something productive in order to make sure that this election is secure as possible. And a lot of that is going to come down to making sure that you're supporting candidates, you know. If you're going to sit back and not vote, and I'm not saying that Dan is, and you're just saying this is going to be fraud, then it's not going to be helping the situation at all. All right, we got just enough time to do this real quick. Looking at the clock. Nearly two-thirds of U.S. drivers have adjusted their driving habits since March to combat soaring gas prices, according to a recent survey from the American Automobile Association, AAA. So this is from Study Finds, okay? Drivers are changing habits to combat high gas prices. Now, while Pete Buttigieg, right, would have you want to go and purchase your electric vehicle, what we're finding out is that 88% of respondents reported driving less Many also said they were more likely to cancel, postpone, or travel or delay major purchases because of increased fuel prices as well. So, but Pete Buttigieg was on CNBC, and he said this.
What's important is that we get to zero emissions as quickly as we can, and that too is not automatically a switch. I think there are a lot of consumers, including me, by the way, who have turned to a plug-in hybrid vehicle that is, for all intents and purposes, an electric zero-emission vehicle most of the time, like when you're driving it around the city, but uses gas when you go out over the road. A lot of the more affordable options in recent years and some of the vehicles that are just available more readily have been of that type. Still, the long-term goal has to be to get to true...
Yeah, it's not going to happen. People are changing their habits. And they're not going out and buying EVs. It's simply not happening. Because they can't afford it. Robbie, recap us.
Let's do it. In the 6 a.m. hour, we learned the lack of support for Ilhan Omar from local mayors is in play. A show of support for the jailed Brittany Griner, and the government provides more support for those with monkeypox and those who support climate change and energy. I need some support after this recap. In the 7 a.m. hour, we welcomed in for friend of the show Friday, independent journalist Rebecca Brannon, as well as the intelligent and insightful Howard Root, to discuss Farm Fest as well as crime in the Twin Cities. Then in the 8 a.m. hour, we had a hat trick of guests with Representative Tom Emmer joining Farm Fest in the primaries. Coming up next Tuesday, we're discussed, as well as the Inflation Reduction Act. GOP-endorsed candidate for AG Jim Scholz joined with his plan for crime for the cities. And the lovely Laura Ingraham from Fox News discussed her trip here to the cities this week and her reports 2 years post-George Floyd, as we closed out the show and the week with a bang. If you missed any of today's program, listen to the podcast, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, or download it wherever you consume your audio.
On Monday, Andrew Langer, Jai Hansen, and Jason Lewis. Also, David Gartenstein-Ross and Pete Stauber on Tuesday's show next week. Get outside, enjoy your weekend. We're back at it. 6:05 on Monday morning with your over the weekend talkbacks from the iHeartRadio app. Thanks for listening. Bye. I don't want nobody.